fucking Italian people. How do we miss out on this? What? Fucking espresso, cappuccino. We invented this shit. And all these other cocksuckers are getting rich on it.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
And it's not just the money. It's a pride thing. All our food. Pizza, calzone, buffalo mozzarella, olive oil. These fucks had nothing. They ate Poutine before we gave them the gift of our cuisine. But this is the worst. This espresso shit.
Take it easy.
That's right. Take it easy, because we are about to get down. Take it easy. Talk some Sopranos. That's right. We are at season one still, episode two. We're back with a new episode of Cut to Black, a Sopranos sit down. My name is Jim Scampoli.
I'm your still Sopranos baby. Well, I'm heading into those terrible twos. I'm now 2 years old since Sopranos years, and I'm starting to get rambunctious. I'm starting to have opinions, and I'm starting to say no to things. And my name is Jacob Burrows.
Oh, Jacob Burrows, how is this going here in week two of watching a show week to week?
You know, it was rough for the first few days because I didn't watch it, but then I watched it. And I thought that was cool. And now we're talking about it. You know, a week is not as long as it seems. Time flows down in a little sand passes of time, you know, and then it's all in the bottom of the hourglass and you die. So it's going good. Great.
All right. So, yeah, in short, it's going good.
I was joking, but a week is way shorter than you think as far as going a show week to week, because we're so used to binging that we're like, a whole week? And now I'm like, oh, we were just talking about the previous one. This might not be as difficult as I anticipated.
Yeah, very true. So we should say right up the top here, for people that don't know, we're going through a Sopranos, well, rewatch for me. Watch for the first time for this Sopranos baby, Jacob Burrows over here. It should be said that we will be discussing spoilers as far as through this episode, through the second ever episode of Sopranos. We will not be discussing anything beyond that. So even though I have seen it, if you haven't, there's no worry. We're just going episode by episode. So maybe we'll talk about stuff in the previous one and in this one. So there you go.
And if you haven't watched The Sopranos, and yet you somehow stumbled into episode two of our watch-along, this is the best time you could possibly start watching The Sopranos, I think, because we're going to go on a journey. We're going to be streaming on Sundays most of the time, and it can be part of your little habit. Sopranos Sundays is what we would name it if it wasn't such a great title, Cut to Black. We can be part of your weekly routine. What a dream! Us and the mobsters.
Now, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the episode, 46 long, I will play therapist for a minute here and ask Jacob some questions. Jacob, now, this is slightly on topic with Sopranos, but what is your relationship with mob movies? Like, where are you at? Have you seen all the classic? Are you a fan? Is it kind of not for you? Where are you at?
I'm gonna say I'm like medium on it, I guess. Like I've seen all the Godfather movies, and still at the same time it's embarrassing to say, but I earlier today Googled "They Pull Me Back In." Which one is that from? It's a long while. It's been a while. Okay, I was more into Godfather 1 and 2, to be honest.
Well, don't get me wrong. I guess
fine.
To be fair, I probably haven't seen all of Godfather 3. Right, but I know what they're talking about. God damn it.
Yeah, well, I know in a general sort of sense, but I was like, which one is that from? And I really like Godfather 1. Haven't seen 2 as many times. I've seen 1 a few times. Goodfellas is really good. Casino. I can't say I've seen all of them, but it's a bit of a blur of my calzone, and then this and people get shot, and like I like that stuff, but I'm not an expert.
I think that's prejudice, what you just did. I don't want to say it's racist, but it's for sure prejudice.
Well, I'll say it's racist because I was specifically thinking of a very Italian caricature that you can't even see with your mind's eye, but it's in mine and it's pretty bad.
Now, well, how many times have you seen Goodfellas? And how much of a favorite movie is it, your favorite movie ever?
I feel like that's a leading question. I do not know how many times I've seen it, but I could probably, I'm sure I could count it on one hand.
Well, one thing I will say as part of this journey is that I think we'll need to watch Goodfellas a couple times. I think we'll, and I'm not even shitting you. I ain't shitting you right now. I think we will need to at least watch it once and discuss Goodfellas, I feel, because if anything, David Chase is a big fan of Goodfellas. I mean, you do realize that Dr. Melfi is from Goodfellas, right? And Christopher also in Goodfellas.
No, I don't realize that, but okay.
Well, there's one thing you should know. Dude, you know, we got to watch Goodfellas soon. But I
Yeah.
mean,
Every
Christopher
week.
is that famous scene with Spider. Like, hey, you know, why didn't you get me a drink, Spider, with Joe Pesci? Do you know this scene?
Yeah. Or wait, is that the shoeshine boy scene? Is that a
No,
different movie?
that's Billy Bats. I mean, that's going to come into play later with The Sopranos. Oh my God, we need to be re-educated on Goodfellas. But
Yeah.
now it's just Christopher plays kind of, he's just, it's a bit part. He's just the guy serving drinks while they're playing like poker or something. And he doesn't bring Joe Pesci a drink.
I
And he's,
imagine that goes down well.
it's that whole argument of like, why didn't you bring me a drink? He's like, well, no, I thought you said you're all right, Spider. And he's like, no, you ain't all right, Spider. It's great. It's a great scene.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't want to get too into Goodfellas. We're talking Sopranos here, but I'm just saying, all you other people at home, listen, prerequisite. We need to get on some Goodfellas. Probably, you know what? Maybe we finish off season one, do a quick Goodfellas refresher before we get back into season two.
I
But,
think that makes sense. What other, mandatory mob movies? I mean, not necessarily. I guess they're all related to The Sopranos because they still in episode two, they're talking a lot about how like the golden age is gone, and not just, US, but particularly in the US, you look back at old classic movies and you're like, wow, these were the days, the gentlemen were real gentlemen and everyone played piano in the bar. In general, in old movies, but then there's the gangster ones, and I can see there's going to be a lot of it in this because they're constantly talking about the good old days, and those are movie days.
well, I mean, that's actually a good question because, I mean, I think good, as far as like real life feeling like companion, I would say Goodfellas. I mean, there's obviously the Godfather movies, but I think Goodfellas is such a perfect companion with the Sopranos. And to be fair, I need to bone up on my Godfather knowledge. I've only seen one and two a couple times, but even in this episode, I guess it's not technically a gangster movie, but Tony references an old 1940 movie, The Bank Dick. It's about Egbert Suse as comic adventures as a substitute film director and unlikely bank guard. So,
Sounds great.
I mean, I guess I think that's something we can explore because they do reference a lot of old movies as far as for what Tony watches. So maybe there's some other old gangsta flicks we could bone up on as we go through the catalog and
Yeah,
start to get.
we're like that priest. Like, what is Tony like? Like, what movies does he enjoy? Maybe we could watch
Exactly.
some together.
So you know what? Because here we are in episode two. Yeah, we're still fleshing things out. I think we should start keeping references on some of these movies here and getting well acquainted with them for our discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. So this episode starts where with them counting money at a big table, and on the TV they're talking about mob activity, how everything's changing, and it's all terrible. And someone tries to ch change the channel, and Tony will have none of that. He switches it back, but he switches him back. It's weird because he agrees with part of it. He's angry at it, but then they talk about how, there's a disregard within the mob for the rules and for like, oh, they betray themselves, and he's like, that's too damn true. And then like a second later, he's shooting a rubber band at the TV, and I love how long he holds it. I think that may have been done in, the editing, but he pulls it up, and then it's like a little bit on the other shot, so he's sitting there waiting for the guy he hates to come on so he can. And he does. So this snitch turned best-selling author, which was also brought up in the previous episode when they were like, you think I haven't had offers to go write a book or whatever the fuck? Like, this is what we do. What are you doing? You're ruining everything. And yet he loves mob movies. So yeah,
Yes.
that's where
Well,
we
yeah.
start out.
It's great because yeah, the TV host is kind of saying what Tony was saying in the pilot, just about how things like in his business, it feels like things are coming to an end. But you're right, because then they bring out his attitude changes a bit because they do. They bring out a stooge, someone who sing like a canary, see, against his friends. And you kind of get a sense that they probably knew this guy, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
And one thing that should be said about this episode, and I know since you're a newbie, I wouldn't constitute this as a spoiler, but this is the only episode that has a cold open like this.
Okay. Where
there's a cold open before the intro. I'm not really sure why. Maybe it's just because it's a great scene, but maybe they couldn't figure out where to place it in the episode. But it's a nice, you know, reintroduction to the mob life here. And it is that thing. We talk about this a lot on Shows What You Know. When you have an episode two, you want to get that feel back. You want to, you know, reacquaint everyone with the pilot in a weird way. I don't think mm-hmm. Sopranos does it quite as much as other shows do. But from the crew standpoint, like this episode was shot 10 months after they had shot the pilot. So it's almost like everyone's getting back up to speed. But I love this scene because not only does it have all this stuff going on where, you know, it's mob guys counting all their mob money while watching a discussion about the end of the mob. But then it devolves into this like three conversations going at once. So it feels like you're just hanging out in this room with these gangsters as they're just BSing about stuff. Because then you got Pussy reading the newspaper about cloning, and Christopher thinks he's talking about cell phone clones.
Yeah.
And then Polly's talking about France because they, oh no, Silvio, I think, mentions like Princess Diana. And then they're like, do you think they had her whacked? And then Polly mentions France and he does his Polly thing where he says a joke and then repeats it to the guy next to him a second later. There's so much great stuff going on in this cold open, and it makes it feel like The Sopranos is a sitcom because it has the cold open, and I almost wish every episode had one like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because obviously for me, I don't know ever, you know, that it doesn't usually have a cold open, and it seems pretty natural, but I'm sure you're right because this scene has nothing to do with the plot of the episode. But it has so much to do with the plot of the show or with setting the tone and everything. It's like if we didn't have the pilot, putting this scene at the start would kind of save us. Like it would, except they talk about ducks and stuff, so it doesn't, obviously not a good idea. But as far as it being a long time between producing the two bits, this is a great reintroduction. And you're right, like the rhythm of the conversation back and forth and how it goes is really nice and really specific. And like several conversations going on at once, it's really just an enjoyable scene, and with a lot of symbolism, as you said. Obviously they're counting their money all while shitting on this and that and getting into nonsense as well.
To tie it back in again with Goodfellas in a way, I remember like reading an interview with David Chase, and he talks about Goodfellas, and one of the things that like he wanted to explore or that he knew would be a part of the show Sopranos was, yes, these are criminals. These are, you know, bad people. They commit murders. They hurt people, but they're funny guys. And I think this is one of those scenes as well that gets that across, that it's like you're just hanging out with some funny guys. Like, yeah, I mean, if you dig deeper, there's some more to it. But on the surface, it's just some dudes kind of hanging out, cracking jokes. And, you know, like it's great when Silvio's doing the time I got out, they pull me back in. And then it ends on like the scene ends on that. So it's like a weird joke that they punctuate the scene with before it goes into the opening credits. So like that's what reminds me of like a sitcom, because it's like, all right, here we go. Punchline. Let's bring it on home, guys.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, the first scene after that is them, hijacking a truck. And if it starts like a show that starts with that is going to feel totally different than a show that starts with this scene. And the hijacking of the truck is a bit comical as well. But, you know, it would be like the first time we see Christopher again, he's like there with a gun threatening someone, and compare that to here hanging out and kind of being, not quite bullied, but he's kind of a bit outside of the jargon going on. And this is, you know, he has some development in this episode, so it's better getting to see that first and not just him as an aggressor robbing people as the first thing.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because we hope the show proper opens with the truck robbery, because you got to get those DVD players brand new. Have you heard of DVD? I hear it's like as good as laser.
I mean, it's funny that if you had DVD players today in that quantity, no one would take them. You'd have to like beat up a trucker and fill his truck with them. And he'd be like, please, I need this job. You got to beat me up to show that I tried to resist the DVD players.
That is a great moment too, yeah, where the guy has to be like, come on, I can't be unscathed here. And of course they take it a bit too far. They're like, all right, let's give him some scathing then. And even though he gets like two punches, he's like, all right, that's good, thanks. They're just kicking him in the chest and, you know, beating him up on the ground, because hey, the guy asked for it, right? Let's have fun beating someone up.
Yeah, yeah, it's a freebie.
And then
I was going to say, then we're back at home with the Sopranos. Yep. In a very sitcom type setting. Again, he's walking around in his robe. He's the schlob, and the family's all got it together. He's the big guy who's patting his wife on the butt and everything, and they're sniping at each other. But the main thing with the scene is we find out about this stolen car of the kids, who Tony's not too interested in, but he asks what his grades are like, and that starts that whole storyline.
Yeah, it's a nice little joke, because Carmela's doing the she's being very obvious, but thinks she's being like not being obvious about like, huh, oh, these teachers, they don't make much money. And she's trying to hint at Tony like, hey, you're like a capo in the mob, so if someone's car got stolen, maybe you could figure something out. And you know, Tony's just being goofy. He just woke up from a bender and he's just getting some orange juice, ready to go back to sleep. But yeah, again, a nice punchline when he asked AJ what grade he's getting in that class. And what does he say, like a D- or something like that? And he's like, oh, I'll see what I can do. And she's like, that's not what I mean, but probably that's kind of what she means, you know? So yeah, that sets up a nice comical little side plot where Tony's got some guys looking around for AJ's teacher's car that was stolen.
Yeah.
And then what we cut to, we get to the Bing after this, right? The Bada Bing, the strip club.
Yes. Now I know the name. Like, do you say names? I'm like, I have to wait a bit. And then, oh, the strip club. Yeah. The strip club. We get to the strip club where the guy, Georgie, who runs the bar, I guess, can't handle the phone. And Tony's trying to reach someone called Serge. But it's all very complicated because, you know, Georgie's pushing the wrong buttons and stuff. So he decides to call his mother instead for a nice peaceful chat. And they really get on like a house on fire, don't they, those two? She sets fire to the house.
Yeah, it's great, because first she's spending time giving him shit because he called, and then she's like, oh, I saw so-and-so, and he's always calling his mother. And he's like, I was wondering when you would call. And he's like, well, you don't have to wonder anymore because I'm calling. And then she goes, she's like, well, I need to go turn the heat down. But then she gets distracted by the black post office post carrier, and she's just leering out the window going, what's she up to now? When clearly all she's doing is delivering a package. Yeah. And one of my favorite moments is the fire breaks out. Like, it's like basically like a grease fire on the stovetop, and she throws water on it, which is the thing you're not supposed to do. But then when she goes back over to the table, she picks up the phone and she goes, who is this? She's completely forgot that Tony's been on the phone the whole time. And yeah, so Tony, on Tony's end, it's like he knows there's some, you know, something serious going on at the house. There's a fire. He doesn't know. It could be the house is completely on fire. But then also the Serge is called back, so he's going to deal with the call. And he calls Carmela to send her over there. You know, things are building. And Olivia Soprano is not helping, that's for sure.
I mean, I didn't think of it earlier, but I think you'd be surprised how easy it would be to put a laugh track on this whole sequence, really, because it's kind of like this phone, that phone, who's talking here, who's talking there, and she goes to the window, like, what's she up to? Ha ha ha, and then you see the fire, ha 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 ha, like, and like, I'm 40 minutes away, I can't come, and the frustration of that. I mean, this is a situation, and it's comedic, so if the shoe fits.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I forget, does this go to the cappuccino or does this when Christopher shows up?
No, well, the Christopher shows up with the DVD players before this, and okay. they kind of get them tossed and talk about how the sound is better than on laser, but who wants to listen to fucking Men in Black or whatever it is. And
Black Dig.
Yeah, and we find out about, you know, Christopher's friend, how Tony doesn't like him because he does meth or sells meth or does and sells meths, stuff like that. But that's kind of a quick sequence before this, and it ends with, you know, them coming to ask, hey, what about the numbers of this plate of this car you want? And he's like, just has his hands in the air, like, I have to go now.
Oh, yeah.
And the strippers are all concerned, like, is your mother okay? And so on. So the next scene is actually with, is her name Carmilla? Carmilla?
Yes, yep, Carmilla.
Carmilla and Tony's mother is the next scene.
Okay.
Where she is offering different possibilities, maybe the retirement community, which is not a home, maybe moving in with them even.
Which is great. I mean, that does come up again later.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Tony does try to blame Carmilla, but we've seen that Carmilla completely offers, but then you get a sense that no one really wants that. Like, I mean, Olivia doesn't want it either, but I mean, no one in Tony's house, even like the grandkids, they don't want her to come live there, you know. Why yeah. would you?
And it's interesting because she's, you know, I know when I'm not wanted, and Carmilla's like, well, I offering is different from, you know, I'm not gonna beg you to come, okay? Yeah. Because you kind of get the sense that she would do it if they were like begging and like filling her every little whim and like bearing all her complaining, she would do it. But it's like, no, we're not doing that because just you moving in is like a huge positive thing from us, so that's not happening. Also, significantly, she lets slip that Tony's on medication now, and even I'm like, oh, don't tell her that, like, don't. Yeah. That's going to come back because he said, you're my wife. You're the one I trust, not my mother. Okay. He doesn't trust his mother or he loves her. He doesn't admit that he has any negative feelings at all. And he blames himself and everything, which is what this episode is all about, obviously. But he doesn't tell about the medication. He's a fucking mob guy. It's a secret.
Yes. And especially, I mean, even without the mob part of it, just the little we know about Olivia Soprano right now, it would be something she would use against him in some way, you know, just the way she talks and the way she reacts and is kind of like a dark cloud on everything. It would not be brought up in a positive light. That's for sure.
Yeah. So then we get the coffee shop.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, clearly it's like a sit in for Starbucks. Where I guess maybe in the late 90s was it still kind of a new, I guess it was kind of like, there's a Starbucks across the street from a Starbucks, you know?
I know. It's very much like these jokes, they're acting like they're new, and I guess they were. But for me, it's like this joke has been around almost, well, I guess all my life, kind of. So it's just funny that, you know, you complain about coffee shops being everywhere. It's the new airplane food joke, kind of, but it's still funny.
Yes. I mean, that's why I use the clip. I do like the angle of Polly being mad at basically being like his culture was raped, cultural appropriation before it was, you know, a hot button topic here on the internet. Polly's really mad about what's going on here, but he's, you know, he tries to make it seem like, it's not about the money, but clearly like, hey, you could also make some money if you really were able to use this properly. But I like it because even Big Pussy is just like, all right, calm down.
Take it easy. Yeah, exactly.
And what, like what you're saying with like a laugh track, because yeah, the goof is that there's so many of these like Starbucks, I'll just say, and they all, you know, have the same uniform and it's a chain and whatever happened to the mom and pop stores. It's not as easy to just go to one of these and be like, hey, we got some money. Who's this guy? I don't know. They could work at any of them.
Yes. And I think we kind of go back to therapy here. And it's almost like 20 minutes into the episode. Like I had it in my mind that it was going to be, you know, the framework of like and a bigger part of every episode, you know, the actual therapy. But it's already like in episode two. not exactly moved away from that because it's central, but it's not the framework. Like, we're in his life now, you know, we're doing that. I don't, there's no voiceover in this episode. I thought, you know, that was more of a thing, and I'm sure, you know, it may be again, but I don't think there's as much here because it's not, it's more like that's the side thing they go to here, to kind of give a little bit of context and give a little bit of behind the scenes of Tony's brain, because he's talking about this guilt he feels like you're supposed to take care of your mother. She's a little old lady, and she's kind of commenting that not to you, she's actually very powerful and influencing you a lot. And she's like, no. And it's kind of obvious the thing that the things that the doctor is saying, right? I mean, for us it's very clear, but he's like, no, she's a saint. And they're like, what are your positive memories? Well, one time my dad fell down the stairs. We were all laughing.
Oh, I love that. I love that. 'Cause and it takes him a minute to try to think because yeah, she asks him, you know, tell me about some of these warm, loving memories from growing up. And it takes him longer than you'd expect. And the story he comes up with is they all laughed at his dad that fell down the stairs. And but it's like a great example of you know why therapy is an important thing for a lot of people because when you're in something, you don't see it clearly, and to everyone else, it could be so obvious. And then, even if someone tries to tell you, there's a certain way they have to tell you because since you're in it, you're not going to see what they're talking about. And yeah, you're right, like he's telling, she's telling him a lot of obvious stuff, and he's just getting frustrated and mad, like even that he can't come up with a good story. And I mean, she does make kind of a weird side remark, like, oh, what other great tales do you have? Like, it's kind of not very helpful. But yeah, I love that. I love that showing the character can't understand the, you know, what they're what the exact situation is because they're in it. But I also like that Tony is talking about his mother the way he wishes his mother was. And the way he'd yeah tell like a stranger or even you know anyone else in his own circle what it should be like he wishes she was just a little old lady that was happy to make food and buy presents for her grandparent her grandkids but that's not what it is.
And that leads us into the scene where he's bringing flowers to his mother, who's like, you know, I'm not dead, unfortunately for some, which could might as well be her catchphrase. And but she's actually there with Perry Lynn, who's this caretaker who's there for some hours of the day now, I guess. Lasts so long, they're gonna form close, you know, heartwarming friendship, I'm sure. Tony, she seems really sweet. Tony makes a great impression by saying, hey, just to make things clear, in the hours you're here taking care of my mother, no ganja, all right?
Oh my God. It makes me cringe so hard. Because she's clearly a nice lady. Like immediately. We don't know her at all. We just get a nice quick introduction. And it seems like even Tony's gonna be nice to her, but yeah, like when the mother's out of earshot, he's like, all right, just 'cause she has an accent, so or she's like Trinidadian, I think he says, just so we're clear, no ganja while you're on the clock, okay? And then of course Olivia comes over and she's like, she's stealing.
Yes, and I mean it's funny because he's the one defending her to her mother or to his mother, sorry, but he also of course thinks she smokes ganja all the time. But I mean I guess he's being pretty liberal. He's not like no ganja ever, you know. He's like just, you know, on the job, let's be real. I just want to make this clear, you know, no ganja, which of course you smoke all the time otherwise, which is your own time. You can do what you want with it. And yeah, she is also, you know, trying to give away all her possessions and things, and very upset with this whole situation. I don't think it's really resolved in this scene because Tony's actually sticking up for himself for once against his mother and saying, no, she's gonna stay, which obviously means that Olivia's gonna have to take care of it herself.
Yes, yeah, because Tony kind of feels like he's in a power position here, and it's a reasonable request, and he feels like he's got a victory where, hey, there's just going to be a caretaker around the house. It's like it feels like a compromise where he, you know, she doesn't have to go to the retirement community. She could still be at home, but at least someone's there in case something happens. But the way Olivia is, you know, maybe she won't go along with that. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm. And there is a phone, or no, that she tells him that Junior called looking for him.
Yes.
And I guess it's because of the phone at the strip club, and Georgie can't handle anything that he has to hear this from his mother. But this does lead us to a sit down, just like we're having a sit down.
Finally, right?
Yeah.
Finally, a sit down. Yeah, where we find out that the trucks that were robbed at the start of the episode are actually on, you know, Junior's turf for his protection route. Like, he has business with this trucking company, and it's, you're stepping over lines, kind of stuff we've learned about between the pilot and now, of how some of these young kids, either they're getting into drugs or they're not listening, they're not respecting the rules, and we're kind of seeing that play out here.
Yes, and here's where I'm sure we'll see things differently, because I've never watched Sopranos. So I had to like skip back a second, because I was like, what's happening in this scene? And I had to skip back because I kind of missed Junior saying, you're the boss, telling me he has to do this. And I'm like, that's the boss? Because this is the first time we meet this character. And I was like, no, Tony's the boss, clearly. But yeah, this guy's the boss, I guess. I don't know. I don't know who he is. And I know he's not a Soprano, because he's like, you Sopranos are like crazy, man.
Yeah, this they don't spend time really breaking it down, but like the short version is that yes, Tony's a boss, but he's a boss of his crew, like the guys you see him with, and then like each little area of New Jersey have little crews that do certain turf areas, but then you have the boss of Jersey, and that's Jackie Aprile, who we meet here. But I can't blame you, because I know the same way when I first watched it, and it takes a little bit of being like, oh, okay, wait, what?
Which is fine, actually, because yeah. I'm sure it will be obviously explored more moving on, but it was kind of a moment of like, oh, he's the boss? And he's got cancer, I guess? Okay, and then later they do lay it out more clearly, where I think Christopher's the one who says, like, everyone knows that you're the one who's running things, you know, his friend makes a tasteful comment of like he turned into Kimo Sabi and gets thrown out of the office and stuff.
Yeah,
but anyway,
comically thrown out like Jazz on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I don't know if you ever watched Fresh Prince, but because it is a point where he's like, open the door, and he really like tosses him like 6 feet somehow.
Yes, but moving back to this scene, Junior is upset because of the trucking company has been paying him protection money for like 21 years. So reasonably, you don't want your nephew to attack them, because they're already lining your pocket. And I mean, Tony has a point that he's like, I thought we could, you know, work this out, but instead we're at a sit down all of a sudden. Seems like it's kind of raising tensions between the two of them. Not that they love each other that much anyway, but still, this is almost like a moved chess piece from Junior's side, it seems.
Yes, yeah, because it's a big deal, like where, you know, Tony's crew or a member of his crew is kind of stepping out of line, but yeah, you get the sense from what Tony's saying, and even the way Jackie's kind of reacting, is that does it need to be this sit down here with the boss about something like this, where, you know, you're just going over someone's head. Yeah, I get, like you said, it's just a chess move to kind of make them look bad and kind of show that, you know, there's some animosity there, and maybe things can escalate.
Yes, and then Tony shit talks a guy in a car. Again, I don't know who this is. I assume it's like Junior's driver.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Okay. Because at first I thought this would have been stupid, obviously, but I thought it was maybe like the FBI, like, we know you're listening. I'm going to go call you a cocksucker real quick.
Yeah. Because and especially get back to mob movies. That's kind of what we're taught, is like we've seen scenes in mob films where they'll go and just walk up to a random car and start shit talking the guy because they know he's just an FBI tail or what have you. And yeah, this isn't fully clear the way it's laid out, that it's just kind of his boy. It's just one of Junior's guys.
Yes. And this sweet lady taking care of Olivia has had enough. And Olivia just doesn't know what The problem is, did you say something to her? I know how to talk to people, she says. who knows what they'll take the wrong way, these blacks, as she calls them. So she's managed to deal with that situation real quick.
Yeah, she took it into her own hands. She's not going to let Tony make a decision here.
Yeah, and then we're at the scene where he gets thrown into a pig, literally. Gets thrown out of the office and into a butcher's block full of pig parts. And it's because they need to pay restitution. They need to pay 15 biguns, and they're not too keen on it.
And Christopher's doing his Christopher thing. Like, right as the scene starts, he's yelling at Tony about how things are unfair. And, I mean, Junior is probably being unfair, but he clearly has the right to. But then Christopher's also yelling about how, you know, what he did in the pilot. I forget the name, whatever the name of the job was. But when he killed that guy, he says, you know, he should have been made on the spot. Because that's kind of what I was asking, too, as far as mob movies, you know, about, like, being made like a made guy and a not made guy.
I mean, I know of it through movies, obviously, but practically speaking, I don't know what the difference is. I mean, I know that means you're in, but what does that actually mean? I look forward to seeing more practically what that means.
For sure. Yeah. And that's kind of like Goodfellas dabs into that a little bit, because it's like when you kill, if you put a hit on someone or kill someone, if they're not a made guy, it's not as big of a deal as if someone's a made guy. And yeah, maybe we'll learn a little bit more about it. But yes, so Christopher's pushing buttons like he is. Tony's kind of loving it because he's going to be able to maybe get a taste of that money as well, even though he also got his DVD player. So, you know, it's good at the top, is all we could say, because even Christopher has to say, when Brendan asks him, you know, what's his taste going to be? And he's like, probably like $2,000 or $3,000, then give Junior 10, and maybe some other gets lost in the transaction fee, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Tony's being reasonable because he's like, he's telling him, look, you have a reputation for immaturity, which is, you know, and that could be a great insult, but it's obviously true just from watching the way he acts, Christopher. Like, you have a reputation for immaturity. How are you ever going to become a made man if you do things like whine and bitch about paying this, or like not checking beforehand and everything? And not right away, but later Christopher kind of sees the sense of this, which also kind of, I guess that also is why the cold open is so great. I know I'm skipping forward a bit, but at the end when he realizes maybe we should respect things more, you know, that's the thing from the TV at the beginning, that people just stop obeying the rules, and that's why everything's gone to shit. And he wants, like, he says as well to his friend in that later scene, that all I wanted as a kid was to be part of that crew. And he still wants that, and he still believes in, you know, Goodfellas. He still believes in the old dream, because that's the what he saw and aspired to. So that's why it was really nice that, I mean, they're all criminals, but that's why it was really nice that he was, you know, not being a dickhead.
Yeah, like honor amongst thieves. And to go back to that later scene like you're talking about, I do like it because it does seemingly come out of nowhere. Like, they don't do a thing where we see Christopher, like, either talking to his girlfriend or having a moment. It just, when his friend shows up to do yet another truck robbery, which they decide to do against, you know, kind of against any good knowledge, he kind of comes to his senses. And part of it too, because they show when they're planning it out, they're like snorting drugs or whatever, I don't know if it's coke, meth, whatever, they're just on drugs. And it, again, like, it does tie into the cold open, because they talk a lot about how the drug trafficking and just drugs getting into the mob world have kind of changed everything. So I do like that. And I like, yeah, like you said, how Christopher just realizes, wait, I'm on the path of what I wanted to do. And this Brendan guy's on the outside. And like throughout the episode, because there's a moment when Christopher's trying to talk to Tony, like, you could be nice to Brendan and he's a friend of mine and whatever, like trying to get him in. But, you know, you don't want Brendan around. It's clear Brendan's trouble. He's a bad influence, if you will.
Yeah, he is. And I mean, he's Christopher saying, I'm getting nowhere playing by the rules, fuck Tony. And you know, that's why it would seem like a good thing to hit this place, because it's kind of like, take what you can, you know, do whatever you can to get ahead in life. And that's clearly this scumbag's point of view. He's saying, like, you know, Junior is practically forcing us to do it by taking a shit on our head and, you know, making us say thanks for the hat and all that. But as you said, they're in this club at the time where, you know, all sorts of famous people are going in and everything, and they have trouble even getting into the club.
Yeah, it shows that they're not, like, it's just another way to show their kind of rung on the ladder. Like, yeah, Christopher's in Tony's crew, but yeah, he's still waiting outside trying to get into a club. But I love when they have the Scorsese guy walk by, and then yeah, Christopher goes, "Kundun, I liked it." That's one of my favorite lines.
Yeah. So, going on at the same time, we do have the car debacle. They're looking for this car, following a lead from the coffee shop where he hilariously steals a coffee maker to make up for cultural appropriation. I'm going to put a laugh track on this episode, just so you know, later, and put it on our YouTube. Please go to youtube.com/showswhatyouknow, because there's a lot of great moments that could be laugh tracked.
You could trim this down to a nice solid 22 minute sitcom style of this episode, and it would work perfectly.
Yeah. And they follow this lead and end up at a place with two gay men who drove off in the wrong car. So they're going in and threatening them. And I love the line of, like, "I'm not saying anything until I have my lawyer." Like, "Oh, really? We're going to put in a gun in your mouth real quick. Who the fuck do you think we are?" So that all ends with them going and seeing that the car has already been stripped. So they're like, "Okay, one of us, you're going to get the plates, and one of you is going to stay with us, and the other one's going to go out and boost another car just like it."
Yeah, so that's their great answer to this issue. "Oh, we'll just go steal someone else's car." And you know, you're not a teacher of a mob boss's kid, so screw you. You can deal with the insurance, even though they don't pay full value, like Carmilla told us. And which ends, again, a nice hilarious moment where he's like, "Huh, keys are different."
"Oh, the colors on the inside of the trunk's different, and it's wet.
And the paint's wet." And then little AJ, "My dad's a hero."
That's when the picture freezes and it's like executive producer David Chase, and it's like, and everyone's clapping. You know, that's the end of the sitcom episode.
Curb music can kick in when it goes to like a freeze frame.
Tony Soprano's just trying to keep it together, and he's like falling over. But even a mob leader needs Prozac. Whoa, whoa, whoa. This could happen.
I think it'll work perfectly.
Yeah. So back to the actual interesting storyline. Olivia drives over her friend, which is hilarious as well.
Which is great, though, because in the scene before, Tony is like, I guess it does connect back to Melfi asking him about, you know, good memories, because Tony's trying to build something in his own mind because they're back at the house and he's talking to Carmilla and he's like, "You know what, Ma, you know, she still drives all her friends around, you know, the ones that can't drive. Like, that's really nice of her." And he's got a smile on his face and seems like he's finally like found a positive thing going on. And it's another thing that he's feeling bad about because he complains about her all the time, but she's kind of doing this great service for her community. And then, of course, we cut immediately to her driving one of her friends home. And I love the moment where she, as her friend's walking up to her front door, she's like, "Make a lot of noise. You never know who's in there." And yeah, she's like, "Yeah, I'm going to get my paper." And then good old Olivia goes to back up and just puts her foot on the gas and runs her friend over, breaks her hip, and I guess breaks her wrist on the steering wheel.
Yeah, and it's even just funny the shot they cut to of Tony just kind of lounging in this chair like, "She broke her wrist on the steering column, like we were in the hospital until 2 a.m. And it's funny to me that, of course he does, but he brings up his mother's injury first and not the person who got hit by the car. Because when they're like, broke her wrist, because we just saw her get hit, I assume that's who they're talking about. And then they're like, "What about the other lady?" "Oh, she broke her hip, but whatever, you know."
One of the worst things to do when you're, I mean, never mind when you're an old person, just in general, but of course when you're old, like, oh no, what a rough thing to do.
Yeah. So obviously things are escalating. Like, just in the matter of, as far as I can tell, days. She's set fire to the house and driven down her best friend, GTA style. So we get a scene here where Tony's not having it anymore. You know, he's reached a sort of point where he's got to do something, and yet he's struggling with himself because he's so, you know, upset and everything. He's angry, but, you know, he won't admit it, obviously. Yep. So they're a big confrontation, and he's being all nice and like, don't give your things away to people and so on. And she tells, she says that she gave them to his cousin, which we just learned in the previous, or no, his sister, right? His sister.
I think it was a cousin they gave it away to. I believe. I forget.
Yeah, because he's like, Carm doesn't want it. Not now. We want you to live a long life and wear your sparklers at your grandkids' graduation. And she's like, I gave it all to your cousin Josephine. And he's like, the fuck, the good jewelry? because, well, Carm never said it was nice, so I didn't think she wanted it.
The turn there is so great. Because, yeah, he is being this nice guy. And then once he realizes that, that jewelry has been given away, because we've been told throughout this episode that she gives away stuff because she's always bringing up how she's going to die because yes. That's who she is.
Yeah. And previously in the previous episode, we, you know, saw him trying to apply his therapy to his mob tactics. But now he's like literally parroting his therapist in talking about how nice this retirement community is, and there's some joke, you know, I'm not 100% on it, but he's saying stuff without even really knowing what it means because she compared it to some nice place. And does this ring a bell?
I'm an idiot because I had it pulled up earlier, but I don't know where to put the link is. But yeah, because it's like a French beach resort or something that she brings up.
It's like Cape Teebs or something, and he's like, it's like a hotel at Captain Teebs, and she's exactly. like, what is that? What is that? And he's like, I don't know, a captain who owns nice luxury hotels or something. But he's trying, like, he is trying to apply these teachings. It's going so-so, I'd say.
And what's great about that, too, is because I didn't really know what she was referencing, and I had to, like, look it up, but Tony's doing what like we would all do if we don't get it. We're just kind of like nodding our head, like, yeah. Oh yeah, Captain Teebs. And then he tries to use it later, and he also tries to use her line where she's like, you know, I know elder people who are inspired and who are inspiring. And then he just yells that at her, but there's no contact. But he just says, like, I know elderly people that are inspiring, and it just doesn't mean anything. Yeah, and again, like another sitcom-y type moment where kind of the dumb, brutish guy tries to, you know, use the sophisticated language of someone he's speaking to, and it with hilarious results.
And here's the thing, talking about how similar it would be to a sitcom, it's actually, you know, really great that most sitcoms now don't have a laugh track, not the good ones anyway. And this also shows that it's obviously not a dramedy as far as, you know, Mrs. Maisel is a dramedy, but this shows them blending comedy and drama in a way that's not hitting you in the face with it, because there's actually a lot of funny stuff here that I wouldn't necessarily have said, like, oh yeah, Sopranos, it's a really funny show, but all these things are good jokes too, and it is, like, interwoven really well. Kind of, you know, reminds me of Breaking Bad, the way, especially in the early seasons, where it's like actually hilarious and ridiculous stuff going on. That was, you know, more over the top as far as, you know, a normal person becoming a gangster and stuff. But here, just in everyday stuff, him trying to repeat that and the lady getting hit by the car, all funny stuff, but adding to the drama. Because in a sitcom, someone would get hit by a car and it would just be a throwaway joke. And granted, that lady doesn't show up again, at least in this episode, but it's all, you know, progressing the story as well. So I think it's a good balance.
Yeah, and then this scene kind of ends with Tony saying, like, if she's not going to go, he'll basically get power of attorney and just, like, have to force her to go. It is the right choice with the things that are happening. You do understand Tony's guilt, or the guilt of anyone, if you, like, once... your parents get that old where they're stubborn and they want to take care of themselves, but clearly they can't. And if they can't take the compromise of having someone around the house, then they'll need to go to a place where they can be taken care of. And then, of course, in great Olivia fashion, she's like, go into the ham and grab the knife and stab me here. Like, you know, stab me in the heart. Kill me. I'm going to die. Take my possessions. Just clear doom and gloom from all fronts.
Yes.
And good.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of, you know, all the hilarity, I can't believe we haven't yet got, like, we said all that and we didn't even talk about Truck Robbery 2.0,
yes.
Where they get pulled over and he jumps out. And, I mean, it's already funny because don't hold your gun sideways is funny on its own. But then a gun is dropped and ricochets, which is also, that's, you know, even more ridiculous. Like, in a different show, that would be, you know, very ridiculous. I don't know why I just buy it here. I guess it's because things go bad. Like, if that happened and it shoots someone who's chasing you or, like, a bad guy or whatever, then you'd be like, that's so unlikely. But now it actually makes things way worse for everyone involved. So that's why I guess you can buy the coincidence of it.
And it's great, too, because the guy is even, the truck driver, he's even a little bit more capable than the first driver we see, because he's just like, look, it's cool. I know your contact or whatever. Just do whatever you got to do. And of course, he ends up, yeah, with a well-placed ricochet gunshot to make things even worse. It's almost like a Coen Brothers, you know, foolish criminals on a mission and everything's going to go wrong. And the first good choice we've seen Christopher make so he wasn't involved in this situation.
Yeah, and it's a comedic wide shot when they're all standing there still, and then he, like, thloom, falls over, which is great as well. And, I mean, Tony has a point in the upcoming scene when he's like, oh, you want a fucking cookie for not doing this stupid thing, but you didn't do anything to stop him from doing it, and you knew he was going to go do that? Like, what type of leadership is that if you can't get, like, how are you, that's not a point in your favor. You're still on the negative here, and you're here defending him. So, yeah.
And then, another great moment for Tony, because he made out on Christopher's fuck up on the first truck robbery, you know, getting a taste of restitution. And now, you know, hey, Silvio says, hey, Tony, maybe this suit doesn't have to go back. And then Tony realizes, like, oh, yeah, we could maybe keep a rack of these suits. And you're going to bring this one, and this one back in that truck over there. And I never really looked into the title or thought about what it was until recently. And yes, 46 long is a suit size.
Right.
So I did not pick that up until now. So there you go.
That's good. That's a good one. Yes, but I mean, in the end, Tony's really upset about it, but also I guess it seems like it's going to be fine from this, or I don't know, because he's like, you better go pray that that guy gets up, even though you shot him in the head or whatever, because like, this is not going to help things between him and Junior. And I know I can't ask you to speculate on it, but it's, I mean, it's obviously ramping things up, even though there's no real payoff for it at the end of this episode. And I wonder how much of a concrete payoff to this specific event is going to be in the next episode. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and I think to your point before about the sit down being kind of an unnecessary thing, but Tony's just kind of not picking up on that Junior's trying to, you know, push things further. So you get the impression, the way Tony's acting here, it's similar, where he thinks, yeah, this is kind of a bad thing, even though, like, someone's dead. But yeah, this is kind of a bad thing. But hey, we're thieves in the end. He just assumes it'd be another thing where they got to pay more restitution or what have you. But yeah, you're right. Tony's acting like, hey, it's all good in the hood. It's a big deal, but not that big of a deal. But what we're seeing from Junior, maybe that's a little different from Junior's point of view.
Yes. We also have, he's interrupted, actually, because we skipped over the scene where he's actually signing his mother in.
Yes.
To the retirement community. I like the lady who plays the boss. She doesn't have a lot of lines, but they're good.
Yes.
As they're kind of signing her in. And I'm not sure if he got power of attorney or not, really. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I guess I haven't thought about that because she won't sign, right? It does end where, because the lady, she's being, you know, she's being sweet and she's trying to like connect a little bit to Olivia. She even speaks a little Italian to her. But yeah, I guess maybe Tony did because he's the one that eventually has to go in and sign the papers, right?
Well, he's signing it, but I mean, you would need to sign anyway as like, I'm the person to contact.
True.
So I'm not sure because I thought maybe the scene ended that she didn't sign, but they're unloading all her stuff. So, and I mean, I can't imagine after the earlier scene where she was talking about, please stab me in the heart. I can't imagine she was like, you know what? Never mind. So probably he did. But at the same time, it's kind of weird because if there was a scene of him going to like a judge or whatever to get that paper, or maybe you don't need to do that. I don't know how that works, but he's, you know, he's got a foot in the other side of that world, so to speak. He wouldn't want to do that for nothing.
Yeah, true. I guess the way from what we're given in the episode, I guess the best we could read it is maybe Olivia's just going along with it in the same way she did with her like live-in nurse. And maybe she's got some sort of plan. Like she is just kind of having to do it because she knows if not, then Tony's going to force it, even though we don't see her sign in this scene. But I don't think he has done that.
Yeah, I guess that does add up. I'm just trying to find the quote here of he's just yelling about Captain Teebs. I was just skipping through trying to find what he said that he would do if she didn't do it. But anyway, I guess that moves us to, well, we already talked about, you know, the car delivery and my dad's a hero and all that. So that does bring us to the ending scene where he's packing up all the pictures and getting real emotional about all of them and his mother's past. And then he doesn't quite collapse. He has a shortness of breath and white spots and he needs to sit down. And we go to the final scene, which is in the therapist's office.
Yes. Yeah. And, like you get the sense Tony's doing the Olivia thing when Olivia talks about her husband being a saint, or even what he was doing in this episode when he was smiling, thinking about how his mother drives people around. Because now that he's not there, like, you know, breathing in her toxicity as she's being herself, now he's looking at pictures and people are smiling. And now he's looking around this empty house where he has so many memories in. And now, what we know about Tony, the guilt setting in, he thinks he's this monster. How could you're a son? How could you do that to your mother? And yeah, he's saying essentially that to Dr. Melfi. And Dr. Melfi's trying to tell him, you know, yes, you love your mother, but you need to go into maybe some of the hatred you might have or some of the anger and frustration that's in there. And or else it's going to come out in bad ways. Hint, hint.
Yeah. And now, I didn't go to, you know, therapy school or whatnot, but saying that it's hard to admit you might have feelings of hatred towards your mother is hard, isn't it? I'm not sure what she expected, talking to a mob boss who idolizes his mother. Like, maybe she feels she needs to take the big guns to knock this illusion out of his head or whatever, but it ends with him storming out. Granted, she knows him storming out is, that's probably how every session ends. He's always coming back at this point already because he needs it. But I mean, her point is valid that, you know, you need to deal with your anger and own it, but instead of displacing it, hint, hint, but she kind of fucks up the delivery, right?
Yeah. How so?
Well, she says that he hates his mother. Like, I know that there's other words around that and of course you love her, but using the word hate, is probably not helpful in that situation, right?
Agreed. Yes. Yeah, you're right. Because it might not even necessarily, like, maybe more frustration and resentment would be, if we could sit Dr. Melfi down and kind of help her out with being a therapist. But yeah, you're right. She's kind of really going for the jugular in a way, which, as from what we can gather at the most, this is like his third or fourth session. And we and she already do know that he is a criminal mob boss. So yeah, you're right. Maybe he should take some steps here.
Yeah, and I mean, even when talking to his own mother, he says, like, you gotta stop it with all this black poison. Like, he knows his mother is doing that to him, but it's in the therapy room where he Like, can't say that because he blames himself completely and he feels all this guilt that his mother is generating in him. So yeah, she just decides to, yeah, as I said, take the big guns, I guess, because she's been saying that in an earlier session and it's not quite hidden home. But I think she messes up, she misjudges it, and he walks out. And it's not like earlier because I think he's right to walk out here, kind of. Like, obviously, she's right, but he's also right in this case because it's like, the fuck are you talking about? And that actually, in a way, leads up to him beating the shit out of Georgie with a phone, I think. He's
Yes.
displacing that anger.
And well, and I, what I like about how this scene plays out is I bet you even to Melfi, though, when he walks out, it seems more like a victory because he does it in a way more mature way than he's done in the past when he
Yeah.
just storms out. And because he doesn't react to her, he doesn't do a thing like where he, you know, yells at her or you know, shows his anger there. He kind of seems like he takes it in a mature manner because he's like, you know what? Time's up, and I'm glad because I don't really want to talk to you about this anymore. And then he leaves. But, and I never, for, somehow I never picked this up watching it in the past. Is that, what's the guy's name? I forget his name, the with the phone.
Georgie.
Yeah, Georgie. Because he uses the same language as Olivia because he says, he's like, operator or whatever. Oh, you know, it's like a menu, and he's like, I never know if this is an operator or a voice or a answering machine. And then
Yeah.
earlier in the episode, Olivia, when Tony calls her, she's like, I tried to call your house, but that operator answered, and I couldn't understand it. And he's like, no, it's an answering machine. And he even says during that scene of like, you and my mother, two peas in a pod, can't figure out a phone.
Yeah.
And I mean, I always understood that he just was releasing his anger on him because of his mom, but I didn't pick up the like obvious direct comparisons that are happening like right in the moment.
Yeah, and I mean, he says to Melfi that his mother can't use a phone, even though she has more problems with a car or a stove at this point. Like, granted, she has trouble with the answering machine and stuff, but Georgie's the one who's really like, it's hammered home how annoying it is that he can't use a phone. So, yeah, as you said, they're obviously connected in his mind. He actually wants to beat up his mother, but he can't admit that to himself, obviously, and that's a horrible thing to want to do. What horrible son would want something like that? But he's angry, and all that anger comes out. He beats up Georgie, slowly walks off, and the strippers slowly just start dancing again. I mean, they're two for two on ending shots because I really loved how they moved the camera over to the empty pool, you know, symbolizing how family's gonna, you know, it's not a real family or the family's gonna get messed up, and showing that, you know, yeah, he's acting out, but hey, he's the boss. We're gonna keep dancing.
Yes, exactly. You have that moment, like some momentarily concern, and then you realize, well, yeah, you know, it's if it was anyone else, maybe, but hey, life goes on. Business is business. Let's get this, let's get some dollars on this stage already.
Yeah, exactly. So that does end episode two. I enjoyed it. As you said at the start, episode twos, we talk about it often. It's very hard because in the pilot, you get all the excitement of something new. And, you know, even so, like the inciting incident of the show or whatever is usually in the pilot, whatever sets things in motion. Like here, it's the mob boss who's going to the therapy. That's a super interesting, unique thing. And they're pr making so many promises in the first episode of every show. At episode two, guess what? Not only do you like not have the like the excitement of it being a new thing, but also you have to start delivering on those promises immediately. Like you immediately need to show that you can do what you've said you're gonna do, because that's all you need to do in a pilot: promise exciting stuff. And now is when you need to do that, except you're as far away from the you know, season finale as possible. That's where you put the climax, generally speaking. You can't have too much happening in an episode two either.
Yes.
So it's super tricky. I guess they did it about as well as is possible. Like, obviously, I think the pilot is a better episode, but I think that's unavoidable.
Yeah, I agreed because you have to keep that excitement going, but also kind of like relax the audience into like, okay, you know, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Okay, this is only episode two. We got a long ways to go. I mean, I guess in Sopranos, length. What is it, like 86 episode? I think you said 68 last week, but I think it's actually like 86.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's another few months of our lives sorted then. I think that's probably correct. How many?
Yeah, 86. So yeah, here, two down, 84 to go.
Great. Yep. I did want to mention that it is still possible for you to leave a review on iTunes and request a show for us to do an episode on our regular Shows What You Know coverage, where we talk about all manner of television shows, not in an episode-by-episode manner, usually. And one person who did so was Toots Magoo from Canada, who wrote a review titled Two Hosts That Give Their Honest and Real Opinions. It's a breath of fresh air to finally listen to a podcast that doesn't circle jerk a show for an hour. Well, you should listen to our Sopranos episodes. You mix in depth conversation with some humor, you get a 5-star show. Jim and Jacob are masters of the critique. I would love to hear their opinion on the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers. So, that's been put on our list. If you want to put a show on our list, you can also leave a review.
Band of Brothers. Have you seen Band of Brothers?
I have not seen Band of Brothers, and I've been in a sort of conflict with my friend Anders, who you know from awesomepedia.org/podcast, where I do a show with him sometimes. And he refused to watch Breaking Bad or Game of Thrones for a number of years or any TV show that I recommended to him, but he kept talking about how I should watch Band of Brothers, and I was like, Anders, you don't watch watch any show and I'll do it. Watch shows, please. You don't get to tell me what to watch. And I will admit he has now watched Game of Thrones and also Breaking Bad, so I guess it's a moot point at this point, and I do need to watch Band of Brothers. Have you seen it?
I have. I think that's a good pull. I haven't seen it since it like originally aired. I do remember that. I guess it counts as an episode, because like the last episode, you hear from a lot of the real people that the characters were based on. And I'll just tell you, it's like an hour of crying. You'll just be crying for an hour.
Oh, great. You know, we don't circle jerk you, but we do cry for an hour sometimes. So we look forward to our Band of Brothers coverage. Eweath also edited their review to add in a little bit. I would love if you discussed Fargo season 1 and 2. He just sneaked that in there, which is fine. But Eweath, I will be looking for you in the reviews of our other podcast feeds, which will be coming up shortly, because we want a separate feed for our Maisel Men show. We want a separate feed for this Cut to Black and StrangerThingsPodcast.com to start with, because we're an empire now. Get used to it. But please, we need your reviews on those other feeds. Otherwise, no one's going to hear them. So we will watch Fargo, but please, you know, come on, please, please, please.
Yes, please. Yeah, keep an eye out for our other feeds. Tell a friend and hop on board of this journey. I'm still very excited about this Sopranos journey. So thanks, everyone.
Yeah, it's been fun. Please do come along for the ride if you're not already. And we'll hey, Jim, guess what, though?
Oh, what?
Cut to black.